this show, there will be discussions of the true crime variety. Murder, mayhem, violence, and adult themes will be talked of. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, welcome to Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. I'm your host, Grace, and I cannot wait to start podcasting about true crime podcasts. It's going to be amazing, and if you guys are a fan of true crime podcasts as well, this is the podcast for you, because who wouldn't want to geek out on this stuff? But who knows? Add flag, I'm going to delete that part. Okay, so this is what our show is going to be kind of broke down as. We're going to do a really bingeable series that we, you know, has a limited amount of episodes, has a beginning, middle, and end, and is probably been listened to, like, in a day by me, if it's all put out there. And then we're going to go ahead and do our weeklies. I've had to break these up into a different kinds of categories, but these are the cases that come out every week. They're generally pretty popular podcasts, and if you are not hearing one that you would like to me to listen to and to talk about, then, you know, hit me up as soon as I get that set up. And then finally, we will wrap it up with my all-time favorite podcasts. They're usually pretty silly, and they may not be your favorites, but they're mine, and that's all I have. Don't take away what's mine. All right, enough of this silliness. Let's get to it. It's a deep dive! Deep dive! All right, so one of the first podcasts that I want to do kind of a deep dive on is Serial. This is hosted by Sarah Koenig and was number one on iTunes, according to Wikipedia. This was released October 3rd, 2014, and has received the Peabody Award April 2015. The first season covers the case of Adnan Syed, who is charged and found guilty of the first-degree murder of his girlfriend, Haman Lee, who disappeared January 13th at the age of 18 from Woodlawn High School in Baltimore, Maryland. The first trial was a mistrial. The second trial took 6 weeks, and that's when he was found guilty of the first-degree murder charge and was given life plus 30 years, February 25th, 2000. The current update on Adnan's trial right now was November 25th, 2019. Adnan's appeal for a new trial has been rejected. That is all we know about what's going on with Adnan. The whole season is a complete roller coaster ride. The second season follows soldier slash deserter Bo Bergdahl, who's an army soldier who left his post in Afghanistan in 2009. He was held for 5 years by Taliban and then charged with desertion because he decided to leave his post. And he claims he left to report the poor leadership in his platoon. This was not the, I guess everyone saw the second season as the least favorite of the Serial seasons. Though I found his capture by Taliban story was completely very harrowing, and the reason for that, his personality that brought him to this desertion idea, it's very fascinating. Obviously not the crazy roller coaster ride that Adnan Syed's first season of Serial was. And finally, the third season is at the Justice Center Complex in Cleveland. It was released in 2018 and came out weekly. As far as all the seasons of Serial go, I believe this one is incredibly important, especially if you are into true crime, and especially if you if the justice system and its many failures are intrigue you, and or at least you want to learn more about them, because the first episode really talks about the a bar fight and how this affects a young woman who accidentally kind of hit an officer on the scene in the middle of this bar fight, and he arrested her and said it was an assault on an officer, or she was charged with an assault on an officer. It's, and it's just kind of crazy, because you're like, come on, he, like, her elbow, like, bumped his head or something, like, it was totally not meant to happen, but he was a jerk, and did it anyway. One of the other episodes talks about, you know, the judge's powers, and how that can affect people, especially their questionable sentencing methods. Of course, police brutality is constantly brought up, which then creates this distrust of law enforcement amongst the community. Another great episode on the third season was plea deals with prosecutor Brian Radigan. And Brian is just no nonsense. I absolutely think he's hilarious and professional and just does not have time for any of it. Like, get to court. Because prosecutor Brian Radigan is trying to work out your plea deal. Finally, some of the last seasons talk about, you know, abuse of power, but also the juvenile justice system, which is completely heartbreaking. I think the last two episodes of the third season of Serial just will make you, all of those episodes really kind of make you mad and angry, but also incredibly sad for just the miscarriage of justice and how we treat our children as opposed to adults. And you know what, if you haven't heard the third season of Serial, give it a listen. I strongly recommend it. This is supposed to be just kind of the litmus test for all courthouses in America when she decided to go to Cleveland, because the Cleveland justice system allowed her to take her cameras anywhere and everywhere. So really you can get an idea of what the inner workings of a courthouse in just regular old America works. But it's great. Serial was just an absolutely fantastic listen. I always, you know, recommend that you should absolutely listen to Serial. It's a reason it's been number one on iTunes. Let me put it that way. You know what? I'll be honest. Not only am I telling about the podcast, I'll probably be giving my opinion. Sorry, but I mean, this is Grace's World of True Crime Podcast, and you're just in it. Anyway, so that's it on Serial. Let's move on to our weeklies. This segment we like to call the weeklies. For all those weekly cases, you know. All right, let's get into our weekly cases. So I'm going to start off with, we're just going to do 5 weekly podcasts that put out cases. So I tried to get this out as fast as possible. Some of these podcasts have already put out new episodes. I'm falling behind. I just got to get it done. We'll start with My Favorite Murder. I'll be honest, guys, I hit a turning point listening to this last episode with Karen and Georgia on My Favorite Murder. I did not actually like their show, mainly because the, you know, banter went on for a little less than an hour in this last episode. Not the one they have now, not the mini-sode, the one before, the full-on episode. But once they got to their cases, I absolutely loved it. It was great. Now I've actually decided I like them. I will absolutely listen to the banter and pretend it's like my radio show. So the first story that came up was about Patty Cannon, known as the wickedest woman in America. She was a slave catcher and worked for the Reverse Underground Railroad. this case centered around a lot of the legislation that stopped the transatlantic slave trade in lieu of just more keeping slavery just domestic. What this did, however, is it incentivized slave owners to breed their slaves to create more slaves, therefore more capital. And the what this also did was allowed people like Patty Cannon to steal free blacks and runaways alike and sell them back down south, making a profit. When she and her gang killed a slave catcher and stole his slaves to line their pockets, that's when it started to become an issue, and she was hanged for her crimes. The other story that they covered on My Favorite Murder was the unsolved murder of Alberta Jones, who was a civil rights activist. She negotiated Muhammad Ali's fight contracts. She was the first black woman to pass the bar in Louisville for her to be a lawyer. Am I saying that right? Louisville? Louisville, yeah. Prosecutor of domestic court, which really put her as being the first black prosecutor to, you know, be mainly telling, you know, white men to pay their child support. So all of this stuff is absolutely, oh, she just sounded amazing. And it's a shame that in August 5th, 1965, her body was found in the Ohio River. This really reminded me of a book that I had started to read and had to return before I could finish it. It was called Race Against Time, and it was about prosecuting the KKK. And a lot of this story harkened back to trying to track down these people and these suspects from the 60s and trying to bring them to justice. And this just, unfortunately, is still an unsolved murder for an amazing civil rights activist that we should all know more about. So My Favorite Murder, you guys really knocked it out of the park. Their episode that it was called Anti-Hype Man. And I actually really thought it was going to be a case about the anti-hype man, and I was intrigued. I'm like, who is this anti-hype man? He must be the opposite of Flava Flav. That's not what happened. It was about much, much better things. So moving on to Jensen and Holes and the Murder Squad. Who killed Nanette Krentel? So, you know, they Jensen and Holes, man, they need your help, people. They're always covering these cases where people aren't being arrested for murders because that's kind of what they do. They're trying to solve the murders and help people out in any way that they can by pleading to the public and trying to gain attention for those cases, just like everybody else, but they're particularly awesome. I love Jensen and Holes. Love them. So Nanette had 30 guns and a fatty security system in her house. What happened is her body was found in a house fire, and she had been shot by a small caliber bullet before the fire. They saw that she did not have any smoke in her lungs, which indicated she was dead before the fire, and the fire was used to kill off all the evidence and DNA. What they constantly talked about was how somebody would have had to have the knowledge of that a fire will actually disseminate the entire house and all the evidence. You know, there's oftentimes, if you don't know how to start a fire correctly, it might just burn a little bit and then hit some inflammable things and just kind of fizzle out. It happens if you ever play with fire. I play with fire. You should know. But what's weird is her husband works for the fire department, you know, that someone should have confidence to make sure a fire will destroy all of the evidence. And he knew the security systems were out, and all of this seems to be like, yeah, the husband did it. But there was a lot of other suspects. Guys, give it a listen. Maybe we can find out who killed Nanette. Next, Crime Junkie. Ever since Crime Junkie had their little fiasco where they weren't crediting their sources, and then people were like, wait, they deleted the episodes where they didn't credit their sources, trying to cover their tracks, which, honestly, perhaps... Okay, so where was I? All right, so Pamela was loved by the media. Everybody was looking for her, and her, when her car was discovered, her father popped the trunk to find her body. She was tied and strangled, and in no father should find their child like that. Absolutely terrifying. Vicky was found in a swamp, I believe. She was found outside, also had been strangled, and it was believed that there was perhaps a related, they had a similar murderer. Unfortunately, the media viewed Vicky as a tramp, I guess. She was a divorced, possibly unwed mother. And the media basically blamed her for her murder, just like they did, especially at that time. So, 30 years after Pamela was discovered in her car, updated DNA tech was able to find her murderer. Unfortunately, it's not the same for Vicky. It just showed how different they were treated due to their circumstances. And next, we're going to get to Gen Y. I love Gen Y. So this is the story of Clarence Elkins. This was a horrible story coming out of Summit County, Ohio, of Judy Johnson, who's the grandmother watching over her granddaughter, Brooke Johnson, for the night. Now, Judy Johnson has been beaten and raped and knocked unconscious. Wait. Judy Johnson, there was a break-in at the home. She was beaten, raped, and then stabbed to death. Her granddaughter heard the commotion, Brooke. She went downstairs to see, but then seeing the strange man, ran back into her room and hid under the covers. She is six. Soon, the intruder knocks her over the head. And she is also beaten and raped. She wakes up. She's not dead, but she wakes up the next morning and runs to a neighbor's house for help. It's two doors down to a house where, a couple of her friends' house. Tanya Brazil was their mother. She opened the door and told her to wait on the porch. Wait to get help. So she sat on the porch, beaten and bloody and looking an absolute mess, clearly needing help, for 45 minutes. She's taken to her mom's and absolute hell breaks loose. The little Brooke said, when the police questioned her, what did he look like? And she said, he looks a little bit like Uncle Clarence. That was all it really took to charge Clarence Elkins with the murder of Judy Johnson. Unfortunately, this was a case that absolutely almost no physical evidence was used to convict him. It was only the testimony of a six-year-old girl, Brooke, who even then wasn't 100% sure that Clarence was the man. She really just kind of said it looked like Uncle Clarence. And to be honest, once DNA was actually ran, because Clarence Elkins' wife was just beside herself when he was arrested and was the one who really took charge of the investigation to clear his name. Once they were able to get the proper DNA evidence of a possible suspect, they found that it was without a doubt not Clarence who murdered Judy Johnson. So Clarence was actually released and was paid something like $5 million wrongful
conviction suit from the state and then like $3 million from the Summit County. This is an absolutely crazy story, and Gen Y really, really kills it. Okay, so another weekly podcast I've been listening to, True Crime Garage. I actually was not a big fan of this podcast, but I think I'm liking it a little bit more and more, just because of how cool they are and not over the top. This episode was about American Nazi Jeffrey Russell Hall and his death. So the true crime guys, Nick and the Captain, they are giving me beer recommendations, and I love it. Thanks. Love a beer recommendation. And I did appreciate the history lesson of the stock market crash of 2008, which kind of led to Jeffrey Russell Hall losing his job, and just like everybody else, being in a tough place, just like everybody else, but how he decided that it was everyone's fault but his, that he couldn't keep down a job. So he decided to become a full-on Nazi, joining the National Socialist Party. It's one of those Nazi gangs. One of the biggest ones is something like the National Socialist People. They act like they have a really smart name, but they're really stupid. So what happened is Jeffrey Russell Hall had a couple of kids. He was particularly abusive to his 10-year-old son, Joseph. So Jeff would get drunk as hell. He would be abusive, especially to, Joseph and his sisters. Joseph's stepmom, Krista, was being abused by him. So Joseph decided to take his dad's gun, and he shot Joseph in the head. Joseph shot Jeffrey in the head. And I just feel bad for little Joseph. He is going to be up for parole in a few years. When he's 23 years old. He's currently 20. At the time when he killed his dad, he was 10 years old. And he had asked how many lives people have, and if his dad's still alive, if he'd like to be friends again. So this is just heartbreakingly sad for this poor little kid, taught to shoot a gun before he probably could learn to read, and did not have the knowledge or maturity to understand what happens when you take a life. So wait, did I do that? I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Wow. Yeah, I did it. We got through the weeklies. Woohoo! Okay, here it is, my all-time favorite podcast. All right, first, one that I just can't wait for anymore is Wine and Crime. This episode was about warring families. So, Lucy, she taught me that 12 people died in the Hatfield-McCoy fiasco, which sounded like it should have been much worse based on the infamy of the entire Hatfield and McCoy story. Today, the bad blood has been put aside, and now members of both families have been on Family Feud multiple times and attend reunions together. Yay! Kenyon had a great little piece on Albanian blood revenge culture that spans many generations, terrorizing the children of men who have blood revenge feuds. Sounds crazy. That was so interesting. And Amanda's case was just freaking hilarious. She did her case in almost an entirely fake Southern accent just about the whole time. So that's some dedication. Thank you, gals. You really lightened my day. I would suggest if you're looking for something just to make you laugh, Wine and Crime. Oh, man. All right. So, Obsessed with Disappeared. This one, they covered the case of Tara Grinstead, which any Up and Vanish fans in here, She's the beauty queen disappearance from Georgia. Payne Lindsay from Up and Vanished actually covered this case, but this episode of ID that Obsessed with Disappeared covered this on was before Payne got on the scene. If that made sense. So it's Patrick Hines and Ellen Marsh really hate the slut-shaming GBI investigator and all around hated this episode, and I can't blame them. It just feels so unanswered. Everyone is really sure that Tara's murderer may either be Bo, not Ryan, and that because no one can believe that Ryan Dukes would do this. Bo Duke and Ryan Dukes, no relation, same last name, sort of. Anyway, but yeah, this is so feeling unresolved because everyone was just like, really? Why would you kill her? Everyone just assumes it's like, you know, someone close in your relationship, and it really could just be that weird stalker who has the hots for teacher. Jerks. All right, and then we go to True Crime Obsessed. This was about Drew Peterson, and okay, seriously, F Drew Peterson. He sounds awful. He's a bad cop. He's a child predator. He marries the groomed child when she turned 18 years old, and then this new wife that he groomed mysteriously vanishes, and people are starting to question things because his last wife died under mysterious circumstances. They exhume her body and boom, he's a wife murdering machine, which is what they, I think one of the people in the interviews actually said, and then he's a wife murdering machine. I'm like, oh, that's great. I love that quote. And finally, I'll just end it with Morbid. If you guys haven't listened to Morbid, it's Elena and Ash, and I just love their dynamic. They're really well-researched. They're well-researched like Gen Y, but are have some sense of humor, you know? Like, it's funny, but it's also just really well done. I find them very entertaining. I love Morbid. So this week, they did parts 1, 2, and 3 of Ian Brady and Myra Hendley. They are child murderers in the UK during the 60s. And is just announced on the 3rd episode that Elena is going to do a 4th, because after Ian Brady and Myra Hendley were imprisoned, I guess a lot of stuff happened afterward, probably in relation to their crazy lives and the fact that the UK media is so up everyone's butt that they probably knew way more than we normally would hear in the States in regards to famous murderers. These people are disgusting human beings who lured and molested children and killed them. They were child killers, and they were just horribly cruel, mean, awful people. Absolutely hated them, but thank you, Morbid, for covering them so that I know who to tell my child to stay the hell away from. So glad they're in jail right now. Actually, Ian Brady's dead. Myra Hendley, I think, is still alive, but she's still in jail. Okay, so that has been my all-time favorite podcast. That was fun. So yeah, let's gonna play you out and yeah, thanks for listening to my first podcast. Woohoo!
Yeah, I just felt like playing you guys out with a little something nice, you know? Good luck, everybody.